This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I am coming in tomorrow, but not to do any work. It will be Elf Day tomorrow. Ow! Bonked my head. So I'll swing by. I don't know how many people will actually be at my major client tomorrow, because every year my major client shuts down for a week for maintenance and this, that, and the other right during Christmas, so everybody gets the week of Christmas off. So the building will be closed down next week, which usually means that it's pretty dead by Friday. People are disappearing. Because if anybody has a few extra days of vacation, they typically go ahead and take it around this year, because then they can have big, big long vacations. And then, of course, a week from this coming Monday will be, I think, December 31st, 30th and 31st then. And then the first will be on a Wednesday. So if you have a couple of days vacation there, then, of course, you can extend on through and et cetera, et cetera. I'll be back in for the 30th to finish up the month. And since I'm not going to be working next week, you know, I'll get a couple extra days in and clear things through to make budget. The joys of being a consultant. So I don't actually get paid vacations, but that's okay. The rest of the time makes up for it. So all is well there. It's been a good week. We've got some good things done. I've ran straight into some unexpected complexities over the last couple of weeks. But, you know, that stuff happens. I'm building on top of procedures that have come into being without necessarily any technical direction. They've just been things that have built up over time to solve needs and solve problems. And there hasn't necessarily been any overarching design on the procedures. So life finds a way. And what can happen in those situations, and usually does happen in those situations, is that humans muster up. And humans are really good about doing things like, well, yeah, this happens unless that happens, and then we do this, and then, but then we sometimes do that, and then we don't do that, but then sometimes we do this. And by the time you make all those loops and then try to do some formalization of that, things can get exciting. So I had one of those type of situations show up on a new process that we were developing about a month and a half ago. We were working towards getting close to having all the requirements, working along, showing demos, tweaking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then there was a sigh, and the manager I was working with said, oh yeah, we should probably talk about freight, as in shipping stuff overseas. And I said, sure. And so then the more we talked about it, the more we decided, you know what, we need to get the department involved that works intimately with freight. And so we've had, at this point, 3 meetings that have all lasted in excess of an hour and a half. And we're still not down to the bottom of it, but we're getting closer. So I would expect we'll have 2 or 3 more meetings, and I'll just keep building, and we'll just keep demoing stuff and keep figuring out what needs to change, what needs to be better, et cetera, et cetera. We will get that done. But for now, unless I get a call tomorrow, I am off. I am off for until the 30th. Yay. So, and the building is closed. So we've got one more cycle that we're going to do tomorrow night, which will be a big night, because not only do we have the normal December stuff that's going on, but we run all our recurring credit cards tomorrow. So it'll be a big night. and then everyone will be on vacation. No one will be doing any work. They will be coming in to do some work on the 27th and 28th, but that's just to help them stay caught up with the workload, since there is so many contributions that come in right at the end of the year. And so there's the potential to get some calls on there the 27th and 28th, but until then, I'm done! So that's fun. It was ugly Christmas sweater day last week, last Friday. That was fun. That was a bit of a physical challenge. I had mentioned last week that it was going to be ugly Christmas sweater day, and I thought it would be fine, and it was fine. Everything was fine. Everyone who said anything seemed to enjoy it and seemed to find it funny, which was the whole point. So I don't think I described it last week, because I wanted it to be a surprise. I did mention that I based it on a Christmas story. So, and I think I mentioned that the die was cast once my son-in-law suggested I do the leg lamp. If you haven't seen the movie A Christmas Story, or it's been a really long time since you've seen it, none of this will make sense. But A Christmas Story is a movie about a boy in Cleveland, and he's dreaming about getting a Red Ryder air rifle, 200 shot air rifle, for Christmas. And the normal response that he's getting from his parents is, "You'll shoot your eye out." So the movie is a really quirky little movie. Some of the things in the movie have kind of held up over time. Some of them have not so much, and some of them are like, but it is an interesting accounting of what the perception was of Christmas in America. This probably would have been in the 50s. And there's a lot of cute, sad, slash fun stuff in it. So when I was trying to decide what to do for this, the first thing was, gotta do the leg lamp. You just have to do the leg lamp. In the movie, Ralphie, who's the little boy, his dad receives a prize. He had written away for some lottery thing, receives a prize, and it's a leg lamp. You can just look up leg lamp and all the pictures will come up. Basically, it's a female leg that is clad in fishnet stockings, and it has a lampshade on top of it. And it is as gaudy as you can imagine. And when the dad gets it, he just thinks this is the greatest thing in the world. And of course, his wife is aghast. And he proceeds to put it in the front window of their house. And it's just, it's crawlingly uncomfortable. I mean, it's just so bad that a husband would do that to his wife, that a husband would think that was something acceptable to put in the window of his house. Everyone to whom I mentioned that I was doing an ugly outfit based on A Christmas Story, if they knew the movie, the first response was, "Are you going to do the leg lamp?" Now, most of those people probably thought that I was going to do something where I have a picture of the leg lamp or something. But, you know, as long as you're going for it, you just gotta go for it. So I did order a lampshade from the Christmas Story House, which is a little gift shop that's based on the movie, because the movie is immensely popular. And they actually had two different kinds. They had the one from the movie, which was a little stouter, a little taller, and then they had another one which was a little bit more modernized. I went ahead and got the modernized one because it was better sized, and carved that up so I could slip it onto my waist, and then, you know, did the thing with the three pairs of opaque tights with the fishnet stocking over it. And I did get myself, you know, a pair of blunt-nosed patent leather black 3-inch pumps in a size 13. I only wore the one on the one side. Then I also ordered the bunny suit that Ralphie gets in the movie from A Christmas Story House again. So that was part of the costume. And I got a Western shirt, put a bunch of bric-a-brac on it for Ralphie's daydreams. Got a little Western hat, put that on there, put that hat on over the top of the bunny ears, stuck the bunny ears through the hat, you know, just made myself a pair. One leg had chaps on it, so I got myself some cow print material and made some chaps, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, you know, I got myself a little pop gun and painted it. It was red already, the pop gun portion, but the stock of it I painted green, so it was very Christmassy. And got my tablet and cut together the movie to where it was silent movie, and then put magnets on it and reverse the polarities and stuff with a tablet cover so I could just whip it around to the back of my pack and it would just snap into place correctly. And did the same thing with the little pop gun magnet so I could just hold it up, and because I bought a GoPro harness to go underneath. And then I got some neodymium magnets. Is that the way you say that? Neo? Anyways. So I could just snap attachments on and it would go. And I had a tote. Had a tote where I could take all this stuff off and put it in the tote so I could walk upstairs. And then I, you know, would get to my stair or floor I was going to be on. I'd put all the stuff back on, hobble in, see the people I was going to see, hobble back out, take all the stuff back out, put it in the tote, go to the next floor. It was a production. I walked around Walmart for an hour and a half, people taking pictures, whooping and hollering. We had fun. It was good. There were lots and lots of highlights, and I do have something else to talk about today. So, you know, I will move on for that. Probably a couple of just fun little things was... I got to the restaurant for breakfast, hobbled in, and of course the wait staff came over and we were laughing and carrying on, and I started chatting with my friend, and a man came up and he said, "I'm from Cleveland." I said, "Hey, there you go." He said, "Can I get a picture?" I said, yeah, of course. I had to put on the, you know, lampshade, and we got that all done. So that was fun. He said, my people back in Cleveland are gonna love this. So that was fun. The other thing that was because when you put on 3 pair of opaque tights, it smooths everything down. So you can take a guy's leg, which I do have, fairly angular, and you can put on 3 pairs of tights, smooths everything down. And you can make a fair approximation of a female leg by doing that. Got a lot of compliments on how nice my leg looked in the fishnet stockings. Yeah. And at one point, I was in one department, and we were cackling and carrying on and going through all the stuff. And one of the ladies in that department looked at me and said, "Is that really your leg?" You know, there wasn't much else place for my leg to be. I said, "Well, I suppose I could have put both legs in the bunny suit and then wear a prosthetic." But I said, I definitely didn't do that. I think they were thinking that maybe I had gotten a mannequin leg and stuck my leg inside a mannequin leg or something like that. But of course, those mannequin legs are, you know, they're tiny. But I'm thinking maybe they were thinking I'd done. So anyways, we're jabbering and stuff, and I had turned around to jabber at somebody else, and one of the ladies reached out and kind of tapped my leg. And she said, "Yep, that really is his leg." So, you know, it's fun. It's fun. People seem to enjoy it. They laughed, which is the whole point. And I was supposed to reprise it on Saturday. Oh, I felt so bad. I have two different restaurants that I go to on weekends. So usually on Fridays, I will go to a Cracker Barrel that we have here. And then on Saturdays, I will go to a little breakfast place we have called Gailey's Breakfast Cafe. So I had mentioned I normally go to Gailey's Breakfast Cafe because I have some dear friends who always come there on Saturdays. And so whatever the outfit is for Friday, I typically reprise it on Saturday so they can see it. Because the wife especially gets a big kick out of the outfits. They had already told me they would not be there on Saturday. But I had talked to one of the wait staff at Gailey's Breakfast Cafe, and I told her I was coming. She was all excited. But, you know, sometimes you tell people stuff and it's just, well, after hobbling around on this heel and this kind of platform to that I had made out of foam to kind of balance myself out for an hour and a half in Walmart and then hobbling up and down stairs and hobbling there and hobbling there. I mean, I got up Saturday and I overslept. My alarm didn't go off. And I got up Saturday. I was like, whoa. And I bailed, thinking, oh, the wait staff that I talked to, she's probably not going to remember. So I'm sitting there having breakfast with my friend, and she comes around the corner, and she said, you didn't wear it. And I'm like, oh, no. I hate disappointing people. I so hate disappointing. And I apologized, and she was laughing. She said, no, it's fine. I was like, So maybe, I've got some friends, my friends that I normally see on Saturday. They're going to be back this week, and I'm going to talk to them Saturday and see. I've got another appointment Saturday night. And so I'm going to get the get up on one more time, and I may swing by early to see my friends I didn't see, and then if my friend from the wait staff is still there at the restaurant, I may swing by just to see her and apologize again that I didn't do the thing I thought I was going to do. So that was the only real kind of downside. I didn't really get any criticisms. I looked weird enough that, you know, anybody who had any criticisms was probably shuddering and turned their back. It was fine. So that all worked out good. And everyone thought it was very creative and fun, and it was good. Tomorrow is Elf Day. And so that'll be fun. That's always fun. Although the lady I always take a picture with on Fridays at Walmart, she posted a picture today of a couple that was in there, and they were in like the full Santa and Santa's wife, and they looked fabulous. I mean, they looked fabulous. They were like in the real costumes, not this homemade stuff that I'm doing. So it'll be fun to see Beverly tomorrow and chit-chat with her about Santa Claus, et cetera, et cetera. Anyways, so that's all fine. Writing is going good. Got my read-through done. This weekend, I'm going to hopefully blast through and get files made and get everything laid out. If I can get all the files uploaded this weekend, then I'm clear for next week. I'm halfway thinking about maybe working on some Valentine's Day stuff. I've got Polka Dot Day fairly well under control, which is mid-January. It would be great if I could get Valentine's Day, which is on a Friday this year, under control as well, because, you know, if I got those two things under control, then I'm good through the writing sprint, because the next writing sprint starts in January, and I'll probably start it a little early. Starts in January and goes through February, and it would be good if I was just clear and I had all the outfits, you know, done, so it didn't take up any extra time. But this next year is going to be better because I'll have a bunch of stuff that I inherited from last year. So I've already got Leprechaun Day, which is in March. I do need to make Easter outfit. That'll be coming up. But it'll all be fine. It'll be fine. We'll figure it out. It'll be fine. Because it all works out. God is good. He's kind. He helps. He gives wisdom. I'm struggling a little bit with the Valentine's Day costume. I knew where I was going, I thought. And I put on the stuff last night and kind of took a look at it, and it was like, nope, this is not working. So I'm going to return some stuff to Amazon because it's so easy. And then maybe if I can find something else to order from Amazon to kind of get where I need to be. But anyways, all is well. Life is good. Life is wondrous. Got a few little challenges. I have a little rock house that the music ministers of our church are staying in now. And we've got this weird sporadic problem where sometimes when the heat kicks on, there's like a smell of sewer. This is new. It's like, what is going on? I've had heating and cooling people out. I've had plumbers out. I've had, you know, and that the one last thing we're going to try to check tomorrow. Or this weekend, we're going to try to check maybe perhaps the condensate line. I'm told the condensate line from the furnace, maybe that's tied into the sewer. It's not supposed to be, but this was done a couple of decades ago, so maybe there's a problem there that if we just get that replumbed or at least pour some water down in there, get that, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. God is good. We'll figure it out. It'll be fine. So I'm almost home, but I'll just do quickie on the article I found because this is pretty interesting stuff, and it's nothing that's necessarily, I'm getting my mail one moment. It's nothing that's necessarily, blisteringly new, but there were a couple things in here. I almost didn't prepare notes for this, but as I was reading through the article, I went, wait a minute, that's interesting. So I do have one little thing that's really interesting about this and a bit surprising. So I came across this article, and it's funny how things are titled and the slants that people put on things because they're trying to get you to click on it. But it was titled, "The Pentagon's Push to Program Soldiers' Brains." Dun, dun, dun. You know, by the time you get through the whole thing, they're basically just talking about a DARPA initiative for direct brain mapping. That's really what they're talking about. And it's not, you know, I suppose you could say, yes, that the Pentagon is trying to program soldiers' brains, but that's not really what you come away with in the article, unless you're very conspiratorially minded and you just assume that everything's going to get weaponized in the end. Interestingly enough, the people that they talk to in this article are like, well, no, we're trying to use it for this and this and this. But it's interesting because there are initiatives at DARPA, the Defense Research, DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, at DARPA, where they are trying to establish the direct neural link to computing. And other people have talked about this as well. I know Elon Musk has talked about it, and I think Facebook has an initiative. Obviously, I'd be stunned if Google didn't have some kind of initiative. But DARPA is working on this. And the idea, obviously, is that we are tool makers as humans. They talk about this in the article. And the tools that we use are not only tools that we create, like our phones and hammers and all those types of things, but beyond that, our physical bodies are tools. And we use them. We have hands, we have feet. And some would say, well, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could just map our minds onto other things? And there has been some rudimentary progress in this. So, you know, there's one approach is to put very fine microwire electrodes into the brain and then listen to the activity that's going on in the brain. And then try to extrapolate from there what the motor intent might be. There has been, as I said, some interesting things. And at DARPA, the guy who heads up one of these initiatives, Justin Sanchez, he says that his ambition involves more than just helping disabled people getting out of their wheelchairs, you know, much more, because he's trying to actually do a direct mind link. So that's pretty interesting. Just a second. Let me, oh, this is my beloved. One moment. Okay, I'm back. We had just got a different van for her, and she is taking a bunch of ladies, and they're going out to get something to eat, and then they're going to go see Christmas lights tonight, and she can't get the right. She the seats in back are those seats that go down flush with the floor, and she's trying to figure out how to get those things to stand up. She can't get them to stand up, so. But anyway, she's going to try to find somebody there. If that doesn't work out, she's going to call me and I'll just run back into church real quick. Anyways, so they are working on this. DARPA is interesting because it has lots of contracts it's running and nobody knows what anybody else is working on. And DARPA actually has only like 220 employees, but it's supported by about 1,000 contractors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There has been some interesting stuff though. And one of the interesting things is that they have demonstrated, let's see. Oh, here. In 2012, they showed, 60 Minutes showed a paralyzed woman named Jan Schuerman feeding herself a bar of chocolate using a robotic arm that she manipulated by means of a brain implant. So she thinks and the arm moves. A year and a half after that video, DARPA made another video of her in which her brain interface was connected to an F-35 flight simulator, and she was flying the airplane, obviously. You know, DARPA later disclosed this at a conference called The Future of War. There are other efforts that have been carried on. In 2016, Sanchez appeared at DARPA's demo day with a man named Johnny Maffany, whom agency officials described as the first osseointegrated upper limb amputee, which means he's the first man with a prosthetic arm directly attached to the bone. And he demonstrated what was, at the time, DARPA's most advanced prosthetic arm. He told the attendees, "I can sit here and curl a 45-pound dumbbell all day long till the battery runs out." So the next day, Gizmodo ran this headline above its report from the event: "DARPA's mind-controlled arm will make you wish you were a cyborg." So certainly there's research being done and things are moving forward and things could get very interesting. One of the things that I found really fascinating in this article is they were talking about the different techniques for doing some of these things. And there was a 2013 paper involving researchers at Wake Forest University, the University of Southern California, and the University of Kentucky. They said researchers performed surgery on 11 rats. Into each rat's brain, an electrode array featuring 16, only 16, stainless steel wires was implanted. After the rats recovered from surgery, they were separated into two groups, and they spent a period of weeks getting educated, though one group was educated more than the other. So the less educated group learned a simple task involving how to procure a droplet of water. The more educated learned a complex version of that same task to procure the water. These rats had to persistently poke levers with their nose despite confounding delays in the delivery of the water droplet. When the more educated group of rats attained a mastery of this task, the researchers explored the neural firing patterns recorded in the rats' brains, the memory of how to perform the complex task. And they recorded them to a computer. So they watched the patterns off of just 16 electrodes, mind you, just 16. watched the patterns that they were reading in those electrodes. They recorded that into a computer. Quote, Jeffrey Ling is talking here, who was one of those involved. Quote, what we did then was we took those signals and we gave them to an animal that was stupid, hadn't learned these tasks. Meaning that the researchers took the neural firing patterns encoding the memory of how to perform the more complex tasks recorded from the brains of the more educated rats and transferred those patterns into the brains of the less educated rats. Now, by transmitted, I suppose they just use some sort of electroshock something where they stimulated these electrodes in those patterns. According to them, once they did that, that stupid animal got it. They were able to execute that full thing. In other words, for this rat who received the transfer, they reduced the learning period for this complex task from 8 weeks down to seconds. What? It is, obviously, this sounds like the Matrix. They said there's obviously many researchers who question the findings, and they caution that it really can't be that simple. But Sanchez is confident. He says, quote, If I know the neural codes in one individual, could I give that neural code to another person? I think you could. I don't know what to think about that, but that's pretty interesting. So there's a lot of other stuff that's going on here, and there's a lot of talk about, you know, how to read people's brains, how to write into some people's brains, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They talk about the fact that a man-machine interface that does not just read someone's brains but also writes in someone's brains would almost certainly create crosstalk between those circuits which we are targeting and the circuits which are engaged in what we might call social and moral emotions, he said. It is impossible to predict the effects of such crosstalk on the conduct of war, much less in the ordinary course of life. The DARPA spokesman related some of the questions the researchers ask in their ethical discussions. Who will decide how this technology gets used? Would a superior be able to force subordinates to use it? Will genetic tests be able to determine how responses someone would be to targeted neuroplasticity training? Would such tests be voluntary or mandatory? Could the results of such tests lead to discrimination in school admissions or employment? What if the technology affects moral or emotional cognition, our ability to tell right from wrong or to control our own behavior? Recalling the ethics discussion, one man said, the main thing I remember is that we ran out of time. Because there are a whole lot of issues here, obviously. So this is very interesting. There are big companies working on this stuff. Oh, yeah, Google is working on it. They did mention in the article that Google is working on it. And let's see, Elon Musk has said, has courted DARPA researchers to join his company Neuralink, which is said to be developing an interface known as Neural Lace. Facebook Building 8 is working on a neural interface too. In 2017, Regina Dugan said that 60 engineers were at work on a system with the goal of allowing users to type 100 words a minute directly from your brain. I mean, it's coming. It's coming. They quoted one of these researchers as talking about the fact that The marketplace will take it from there once this stuff gets going. They said as they develop their companies and as they develop their products, they're going to be subject to convincing people that whatever they're developing makes sense and that it helps people to be a better version of themselves. And that process, that day-to-day development, will ultimately guide where these technologies go. I mean, I think it's the frank reality of how it will ultimately unfold. And the author of the article says he seems entirely untroubled by what may be the most troubling aspect of DARPA's work. Not that it discovers what it discovers, but that the world has, so far, always been ready to buy it. So, I mean, this is really going to be interesting. Because theoretically, Lance, if you had a direct mind interface, I could just lay there and write books if it would work that way. This is just going to be so. We live in such fascinating times. So fascinating. So many interactions. It's really very, very interesting. So, who knows? Who knows what the future holds? Who knows what the 2020s are going to be like? But we are right on the cusp of them now. And it just seems astonishing that we are almost there. In the meantime, I would wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And I will probably, my plan now is to do a podcast next Friday, even though I'll theoretically be on vacation. But, you know, there's always stuff to talk about. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.